Bright Lights Pathfinders. We are all a bright light searching for the Pathfinder's way. Hello, I'm Kathy Cook, and I'm your host on Thursday evenings at 6 o'clock Pacific Time. That's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So listen up and tune in to Station 1 on BBSRadio.com. It's a positive power production. Unique perfection evolves. Exquisite feelings awaken. Producing passion style.
Hello, we're on the air. This is Kathy Cook, Bright Lights Pathfinder. And this evening I have with me Terry Terrence Nix. He is an author, a lawyer. He has written a book about the fertility drug. It's going to be a very interesting show. We want you to listen up and tune in. I'm not going to give much of a view about him because there's so much to say. He is awesome. His book is phenomenal, and it is about so much information that a new parent or a wannabe parent is needing to know that I'm just going to introduce Terry right now. Hello, Terry.
Hi. How are things going on the East Coast at 9 o'clock at night?
It's just wonderfully gorgeous, except for the allergies were the highest today they've ever been.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, but other than that, how are things over there?
It's been a beautiful day in Santa Barbara. Now that the fires have finally shut down, or at least pretty much so.
At
no time was I threatened, but got a lot of ashes around.
Bless your heart. How about you? I'd love for my guest host to tell, their webpage right off the bat. And would you please tell the title of your book? What gave you the inspiration to the title of your book? And a little bit about what is going on in your world today.
Okay, sure. First, my website, which is the easiest way to purchase the book, although you can get it through Amazon.com. It's not yet in the bookstores. Although I'm sure if you ordered it in a bookstore, they could get it for you. But the quickest and most efficient way is going to my website, which is Terrence with one R, T-E-R-E-N-C-E, Nix, M-I-X, .com. It's that simple, TerrenceNix.com. And the book can be ordered through my website. In terms of the title, I played with that for, I spent about 3.5 years writing the book. And I also toyed with a number of different titles during that course of time. And finally came up with The Price of Ovulation as the primary title because there is a cost when somebody decides to seek through a means that is non-natural. There is a cost that can occur, not will occur, but can occur. And one of the costs is that there can be birth defects. And so that's how I came up with the price of ovulation. That is the cost of using ovulatory stimulating drugs. My book focuses principally on Clomid. The generic name is clomiphene citrate. It's probably the only fertility drug out there that's taken orally. So it's very popular.
That is not Clomid. It's not like Clomidid. It's C-L-O-M-I-D. Clomid.
Correct.
Okay.
C-L-O-M-I-D is the brand name, and again, the generic name is clomiphene, C-L-O-M-I-P-H-E-N-E, citrate, C-I-T-R-A-T-E.
And what does this drug specifically do?
It is effective. There's no question in my mind after researching this drug for decades that it does make women ovulate, certainly a certain percentage of them. And the question is, can it make you conceive? About 30% of all women that use Clomid will conceive with the drug. So it's a minority.
Right.
But for a woman who cannot ovulate, it can be an answer in that regard. Then the question comes up.
What's the cost to that?
Right. And so the question comes up, well, what is the risk? Now, unfortunately, Clomid, which was initially marketed in May of 1967, so we're talking about 42 years ago this month, it was first marketed. Since that time, there has not been one warning that the drug presents a risk of birth defects. Now, I became involved in 1972. I forget which anniversary of my 39th birthday I'm on, but it's been quite a few of them. And back in 1972, I was a young lawyer, and I was handed this case. I'd never tried a drug involving not only a fertility drug, but any kind of a drug. And so this was something new for me. And as I said, I was a young lawyer. 1972, I'd been practicing law for 5 years. And I took this case on. I associated with a woman who brought me in, and I took the case on, and I started learning a lot. But by the time the case came up for trial, I was just not prepared. And there was no way I was prepared to go to trial. And I had actually made a motion to continue, what our lawyers call it. What that means, basically, to postpone it. And the motion to continue was denied, and the judge said, "Mr. Nix, you're going to trial." Down the hallway with the file, and I entered a courtroom with Judge Tom Fredericks, who was since deceased. And I tried the case for a month. And
A month?
Yeah, it was a one-month trial. And at the end of it, it was a unanimous verdict in favor of the plaintiff. I won the case, not in spite of myself. And actually, the case got stronger as it got deeper and deeper into the case. And I started cross-examining their experts. And I started getting all kinds of concessions. And the case itself got a lot of publicity, not just nationally, but internationally. My client, the woman that took the drug, she was born in Sweden. And the father was born in Germany, although they met here in the United States. And they just both had a slight accent. And so there were newspapers in German and newspapers in Swedish that I could not read. I could see my name, and I could see
wow.
That's about it.
That is something. What did you do?
Well, after the verdict, we ended up settling. It was a pretty handsome verdict, especially for 1974, because this was 2 years after I got involved.
Uh-huh.
And we ended up settling with the pharmaceutical company. With about a 10% discount of the verdict, which was satisfactory to the client, and it was over with in 3 or 4 months after the trial. But I started getting referrals of other Clomid cases.
Oh, I see.
And all of a sudden, it became important to me that, you know, Terry, you really do need to do some medical research here and find out a lot more than you knew before this trial started. And so,
was it just in your area that you were getting the referrals, or...?
Actually, I primarily in California, but I did get a couple of them out of state. And over the period of about 2.5 decades, I handled a total of 8 cases. So it's not like there was a huge number that came out of this, but...
How many?
8 different lawsuits.
That is wonderful, though.
And the most recent was in 1996, concluded in 1996.
It's okay, yeah. You're breaking up just a little bit, so I just wanted to make sure I had that right.
So during that period of time, I started doing more and more and more medical research. Lawyers that handle pharmaceutical cases, lawyers that handle medical malpractice cases, lawyers that handle even personal injury cases, like a rear-end auto accident, do a lot of research of medicine because they have to be able to cross-examine doctors or other experts that come in the courtroom. And so you need to know as much book learning-wise as the doctors, or you're not going to be, not only are you not going to be effective in your cross-examination, you're also not going to be able to explain the case to a jury. And so
right.
To break it down into lay terms, you've got to understand the medicine. So I started doing a lot of research on this, and I came across some studies that actually had come out actually before the trial that I didn't even know about. And it appeared that there was some strong evidence already in 1973 that showed that the drug could actually alter chromosomes. And so I came up with a theory based upon all my research that what Clomid did through its ability to elevate estrogen levels, the normal estrogen levels that a woman would have are elevated sometimes 400 to 500% by Clomid.
Oh, my gosh.
And, of course, a lot of women that use it don't really know that. Some doctors will tell them, some won't. But the point is that buying it by itself, the elevated estrogen, normally doesn't cause a problem, although sometimes it will cause ovarian cysts. And that is where my research led me to believe that what was happening is the high estrogen was actually altering chromosomes in the egg at around the time of conception. And so I presented a theory to the FDA. Actually, the FDA, after they got a multitude of letters from me saying, you got to warn, they said, Mr. Mix, why don't you come on out and testify in front of our advisory committee on obstetrics and gynecology, which I did in 1975. I actually testified in front of about 20 very noted scientists sitting at a table. And here's this young lawyer from California telling these doctors what his theory is as to how this drug can cause birth defects. And it became known at the FDA as the mixed hypothesis. And by the way, this is all this whole story, and because my book is told as a story of my story of where I got started, what I learned along the way, the discoveries I made on the way, and right up until the present day. And so it is kind of laid out, including the trial I went through.
Wow. You also told me that it was the first 3 weeks that were so vital with a fetus.
Yes.
In a mother. And about the cholesterol levels?
Yeah, that is something. Now, the cholesterol issue is something I discovered when I was researching the book in the past few years.
Would you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, but what I did learn, which is a very, very significant thing in terms of not only establishing that these drugs do in fact cause birth defects, which has been very much challenged by, especially the fertility specialists in the country over the past decades. But it also offered a means to offset the risk of the birth defect. And I'll get into that a little bit later.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Actually, a means available to offset the risk of birth defect.
I don't understand that part.
Yep.
What do you mean? How?
Well, okay, first of all, here is what I learned when I started researching the book.
Okay.
I started in 2004.
Okay.
I spent 3.5 years researching and writing the book. And one of the things I learned that I didn't know about when I stopped doing clomid cases and fertility drug cases in the mid-90s is what I didn't know is something that was discovered in 1993.
Uh-huh.
In 1993, medical science discovered that a deficiency of cholesterol can cause birth defects. Now think about that a second. If a woman has an extremely low level of cholesterol during early pregnancy, it not only can, if it's low enough, it will cause birth defects.
Right.
Now we know that because there are certain babies that are born with a condition where their cholesterol levels are extremely low, and their bodies, when they're an embryo, you're an embryo for the first 2 months, okay? So let's say the first 8 weeks you're an embryo.
Okay.
After that, you're a fetus.
Okay.
Now, during the embryonic period is when the organs are being formed. During the fetal period, they're basically growing.
Okay.
Okay, so you got that? So
yeah.
Although we usually talk about the first trimester, the first 3 months, as being the risky period, it's really the first 2 months of the first trimester that is
okay.
Very critical, okay?
This is great information, Terry.
Now, what will happen is if the mother and or the baby do not supply enough cholesterol, there will be malformations. And there will be malformations of a very specific type, including a neural tube defect. I mentioned neural tube defect because those have been the most widely studied birth defects that occur in association with the use of fertility drugs.
Neural tube?
Neural, N-E-U-R-A-L, neural tube.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you what it is.
Okay.
Okay. About the second week, you start, there's a plate that is formed. I'm talking about an embryo, okay? The cells have started dividing, and this is after conception, of course, the egg attaches to the uterine wall about days 6 through 10. Okay. And after that, it's getting nutrition from the mother. Among the nutrition that it's getting is cholesterol.
Wow.
Okay. Eventually, the embryo itself starts producing its own cholesterol.
Okay.
But very early on, the principal source is the mother. In the latter stages of the embryonic period, the primary source, although the embryo continues to get some from the mother, the primary source is the embryo. Okay, you follow that?
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, so early on, the mother is the principal source. If the mother does not supply enough cholesterol, what happens is there is a gene. Now, if I start getting too technical on this, I apologize.
This is great. I'm telling you.
But there is a gene, and it's called the sonic hedgehog gene, S-H-H,
no,
as it's written. The sonic hedgehog. It's actually named after a video character. And
so it's an extra gene, or is it?
No, it's a gene that we all have.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's what I wanted to do.
Even when we're adults, we have it.
Okay.
But what that gene needs, and that gene is very important because that gene tells certain organs how to form. But for it to work, it needs, what do you think it needs? It needs cholesterol.
The cholesterol.
It needs cholesterol. And if it doesn't get enough of the cholesterol, there are certain specific birth defects that will occur, including a neural tube defect. A neural tube defect, many people have heard of spina bifida. Okay.
Right.
Spina bifida is a neural tube defect. And
that's a tube, right?
Right.
Where the spine is getting ready to close to the...
That's exactly it. The spine closes and the cranium, the skull, closes.
Right.
Okay? If the cranium does not close, what happens is if it's a large enough hole, then the baby's basically born without a brain. That's called anencephaly.
Is that the soft spot where the soft spot's born?
The soft spot is another matter, but I'm talking about these are not pleasant things to look at.
Yeah.
When you see a baby with anencephaly, basically everything behind its face is pretty much absent.
Is it born alive, or is it just alive in the womb, or?
It happens because during the third week.
Okay.
Around days 23, 24 to 25, 26, that's when the neural tube normally closes. Now, if there's something that stops that from closing, okay, then you end up with a neural tube defect.
Oh, my God.
Okay, and again, if it's in the spinal column, it's called spina bifida. There are subcategories of spina bifida, by the way, which I won't even get into.
Right.
And if it happens in the cranium, you have anencephaly.
Where exactly is the cranium for people that need to know, the listening audience?
Again, this cranium is your skull. So.
Okay, what is this part of the soft spot exactly? Does that have anything to do with, it doesn't close up till they're like a year old?
No, although there is another condition that can occur.
Okay.
And interestingly, this can happen with a deficiency in cholesterol. If you do animal studies and you deny adequate cholesterol, you can cause a condition where the sutures, because what you're talking about, when you talk about the soft spot, your skull is actually in plates, okay? And in between the plates are a fibrous substance. And if they close too soon, then you have a condition that results in microcephaly, which is a small cranium and brain, and retardation. Okay.
That's what I was wanting to understand, because I had heard that exactly what you just said.
Yes. And there's actually one study out there where they found that in association with the use of Clomid, that there was a 280% increased risk of having this condition.
Oh, my God.
Okay. And it was interesting to me because, and what I'm leading up to is the fact that when I started doing this research about these studies in 1993, that where they learned that low cholesterol results can result in birth defects, including neural tube defects. I almost literally my jaw dropped when I read that. And what the reason it surprised me and shocked me and became a eureka moment for me is that I knew that Clomid is a cholesterol inhibiting drug. It is a cholesterol reducing drug. If you go out and you buy Lipitor because you want to lower your cholesterol level, you go out and buy Provacol, you go out and buy Vytorin, or any other of the statin drugs. As a group, they're called statin drugs.
Okay.
Those are cholesterol-reducing drugs that we do to reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. Everybody knows about that.
Right.
As a matter of fact, we know, we've been taught
that
you don't want to have high levels of cholesterol, right?
Right, and you want to kill the bad cholesterol with those drugs.
So now these are cholesterol. Well, Clomid does exactly the same thing as statin drugs.
Yes.
It works on enzymes in your body, and they convert various precursor products, the end result of which is cholesterol, and actually cholesterol converts to various hormones. But if you have low cholesterol, again, what can happen? You can have a birth defect.
What is the situation with the vitamin D you brought up one time to me?
There is a lot of women that are out trying to get pregnant right now, or whether they're using a fertility drug or not, or that are pregnant right now, they've been taught that you want to take folic acid, okay? Because folic acid is a product that is used to reduce the risk of neural tube defects. Remember, we just talked about neural tube defects. One of the doctors that discovered that, his name is Andrew Seitzel. He's from Budapest, Hungary. He's the doctor that I've connected with. He actually wrote the foreword to my book. Okay? He is one of three doctors that made that discovery that the use of folic acid, okay, can reduce the risk of not only neural tube defects, but there are other birth defects that can reduce the risk of as well. Okay? So it's a preventative measure. And what I'm talking about is if you take a cholesterol-reducing drug and you administer that drug to a rodent, a pregnant rodent, it will cause the same kind of birth defects in that rodent as low cholesterol causes in humans. Okay? So now if you did a test and you administered a cholesterol-reducing drug to a rodent and then you examined all of the birth defects it caused, then you took the same type of rodent and you administered the same quantity of that cholesterol-reducing drug to the pregnant rodent, and at the same time, a cholesterol supplement, like a pill.
Right.
Okay? Guess what happens? No birth defects.
Oh, my goodness.
And there are several animal studies where this has been demonstrated. And so,
Terry, I've had people that are listening right now are just as in awe. They have never even heard me this quiet. You know, I'm just, I know that we've talked and you've told me so much about this, but every time that we talk, there's even more information that it's almost so much information that, I mean, I'm taking notes on paper. I'm just sitting here writing down as much as I can because, you know, I want to get this message out there to the wannabe mothers and the ones that can't get pregnant and what do you want to see happen?
Well, what I want to see happen is one day I want to see that cholesterol supplements is something that with a woman who has low cholesterol, I want everybody that's listening right now to understand that this should only be done in conjunction with your OBGYN, okay? There should not be any self-medication by using a high caloric or a high cholesterol diet or cholesterol pills, and you can buy them. They are available. You can buy tablets. You can buy pills that have high concentration of cholesterol. Okay, so there is something available out there, but nobody should be doing this on their own. For one thing, if a mother already has a high cholesterol level, let's say they're at a total cholesterol count of 250 or 280 or 300, something like that, there's probably no need for them to use a cholesterol supplement. On the other hand, if they're a vegetarian, a vegan, and they don't take very many fat products, they may have a very low cholesterol level. Let's say that if they're below 160 or 150, they should seriously consider, especially if they are going to be taking a drug that is a cholesterol-reducing drug, which Clomid is. And I'll talk about other fertility drugs, but right now my focus is on Clomid.
I just want to say to the listening audience just one message, and that is, please listen up and tune in to this with the most careful understanding that Terrence Mix, he has studied this for 2.5 decades. He has taken on cases. He is a strong lawyer. He's out for good of humanity. He has so much compassion for the human being and animals and all things that the FDA needs to step in and do something about this, and that we all want credentials, or we all want something. Well, you know, you can go to the www.trndrilpress.com. You can click on Terrence Mix and the price of ovulation, and it will bring up who he is, what he stands for. It also brings up, tell about a little bit about the book awards, because there's help with women's health. There's parenting, family, pregnancy, and childbirth. There's Science General. There's so many awards for your book that this is going to change a lot of people's lives. And, well, Terry, I just am very grateful for you to be on the show, as well as telling so much information, that I want to make sure that we openly, actively have people understand. Basically, let me just reframe with what I understand a little bit.
Okay.
We have the drug, Clomid, and that causes a woman to make more cholesterol, not enough cholesterol.
That is correct.
Not enough cholesterol. And what a fetus needs is cholesterol in order to be properly.
Animal studies.
Oh, gosh, I'm getting spinal bifid in my mind and all those things. I'm visualizing what happens, you know. And the thing that I want to get out there is, could you give, how can people write the FDA?
Well, yes.
They say anything to the FDA.
Let me explain. Because of my discoveries and the fact that Clomid is a cholesterol-heavy drug, this is nothing that's denied by the manufacturer. As a matter of fact, if you look at the package insert, there is reference to the fact that Clomid is a cholesterol-reducing drug. It is in there, but it's well hidden. And when it was first put in the package insert many, many years ago, nobody saw that as anything important, because before 1993, it wasn't important to anybody. But since 1993, that is an important fact in determining whether or not a drug can cause a birth defect. Now, when I made that discovery, as well as a lot of the current studies, which I will refer to, there are some very recent studies that have been done specifically with Clomid, where they found an increased risk of birth defects. Okay. Now, so in December, actually, exactly December 4, 2007, so almost a year and a half ago, I filed a petition with the FDA demanding that they put a warning in the package insert, because since May 1967, 42 years ago, as I mentioned, there has not been any warning in the package insert of Clonid advising that there is any risk of a birth defect.
But in 1983, was it? What, didn't it get passed that there was going to be one?
In 1983, 25 years ago, and this is documented in my book. There's actually a copy of the document in my book as an exhibit.
Right.
You know, as lawyers, we got to call them exhibits, right? Well, in November of 1983, the FDA approved language that indicated that there was a risk of birth defects with the use of this drug. It wasn't as strong of a warning as I would like to think, but it was at least a warning. And to this day, that has never been put into the package insert. There was another warning recommended by the FDA in 1987.
Did they say why, or did they give any reason? Or
No. They just sat on it, and the FDA has never followed up. There's a chapter in my book. This is the whole story, again, is documented in my book.
Right.
The whole ugly story is documented in my book. And when I say documented, I'm talking about I identify documents, and in many instances, I even put copies of them in the book. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Where there have been studies asked for by the FDA. Studies. Where they asked the company to do studies to evaluate the risk of birth defects. And they've never, to this day, done them. And I'm talking about more than one study. I'm talking about several studies. I took the deposition back in the late 1970s. Now, these guys are no longer alive. You know, this goes back many years. But I took the deposition of the physician with the drug company, which back then was Richardson Merrill. And he oversaw the pre-market clinical studies. Clinical studies are human studies.
Okay.
They took place over a period of 7 years, and he oversaw those studies. He admitted in a deposition, which is under oath, that's under penalty of perjury, he admitted that that study was never designed to determine whether or not there was a risk of birth defects. I took another doctor that also participated. He acknowledged the same thing. Thus, there is testimony that the original pre-market study that was done with Clomid was never designed to assess the risk of birth defects. But I will tell you, the evidence even goes further, because what I discovered not only did the company fail to design the study, and my book goes into all the deficiencies.
Right, and it started, your evidence is in 72?
Oh, yeah, well, the
when
evidence.
When you first discovered it, right?
Yeah, okay. Back in 1979 and earlier, I made additional trips, and also into the 80s, I made additional trips to the pharmaceutical.
So this went on nearly 10 years.
Oh, yeah, many, many years. And each visit, I would get, you know, more and more records. And some of the things I discovered is actually the drug company was concealing in the pre-market, I'm talking about the pre-market phase that went from 1960 to 1967.
I want to ask you something before I lose it.
Okay, sure.
So you were a trial lawyer for a baby that was born with many defects due to this drug.
Yes.
Would you spell that drug for the active listening audience?
You want to refer to the clomiphene citrate?
Yes.
Yeah. C-L-O-M-I-P-H-E-N-E. That's clomiphene, citrate, C-I-T-R-A-T-E, clomiphene citrate. Now, that's
okay.
The generic name, okay?
All right.
And you can buy the drug, you can buy the generic right there, right, you know, right now, today.
No
but
kidding.
It is the same thing as Clomid, okay? Clomid is a brand name, clomiphene citrate is the generic.
That's where I was getting a little confused.
Yeah,
and also, what happened was your wife turned into getting this drug stopped once you started seeing all that it did?
My wife wanted me to write this book. She was the one, and bless her heart, she knew. I wrote a novel many years ago, 1985 was published, and I abused her. I became quite obsessive in writing the book, and she knew that this was not going to be a good thing, but she was so intent on my getting the word out and saving babies from catastrophic birth defects that she said, honey, you got to do it. You got to do it.
The dedicated wife. And yeah. What a blessed woman.
Yeah.
And also your daughter.
Yes.
That just, can I say, that you have a great angel right around your family with your daughter.
We do. And Jennifer. Jennifer was, she passed away on March 30th at the age of 36.
And I just want to say, you know, everyone knows that I'm very, very spiritual being, not very materialistic, but this is one thing that is for humankind to change. Terrence Mix has a message out there, and it will change lives. It will change people's heartbreaks to where we have more love and abundance. If we aren't blessed with a child, then there's other ways and means besides these birth defect drugs, adoption. So many children are born out there. And the love, I heard you on another show that your daughter was sitting and playing with the first case that, was it the first case?
Yes, it was. My client was 4 years old. He had no hands. And my daughter was 2 years old. And after the verdict, the successful verdict, the jury actually wanted to come over to the home. And because I made a decision not to bring the child, the four-year-old child, into the trial.
Okay.
And there were a couple of reasons for it. The primary reason is it was, you know, a four-year-old child knows kind of what's going on, and I didn't want to expose the child of being inspected by a jury. But I also wanted to offset an argument that we were just looking for sympathy. And so,
right.
That
is really great.
So so the jury afterwards said, we want to see the plaintiff. We never got to see him, although I did have a motion picture of him.
Okay.
And so afterwards, there was this gathering at the home of my clients, and my wife and my daughter, then 2 years old, came and was, it was interesting. She was playing on the floor with Mark.
Uh-huh.
And Mark did not have any hands. He had the little hooks. And she did not notice it. And I thought, great it is. You know, children at that age just don't notice these handicaps.
They don't see the awfulness of this world.
Yes.
They see the angels. They see it all through a child's eyes, as they say.
Yeah, through a child's eyes. So you're right.
And did you not say to me that you got to meet later on in life? You got to see this gentleman again?
Yes, I spoke with him on the phone. I wanted him to see the book.
Okay.
And I did speak with Mark. Mark Breimhorst is his name. And Mark, I prefer not to identify where he is at because that's his decision. I'm going to leave up to him.
That's great.
But he and I had a nice conversation after I had sent a draft of the book. And I told him what I was going to, you know, basically find out if there's going to be any objection to anything in there. And he didn't have anything. And we had a nice chat about it. And interestingly, he didn't know about the verdict, which was, like I say, it was a successful case. And, of course, the mother and father had to put it into a blocked account until he was 18. Well, he didn't know about this until he turned 18. And
this
was, you know, I admire the parents. Both of the parents they're still together, by the way, and they live in the same area that their son
lives. Wow.
That they didn't tell him until he became of age, became an adult, and he has since gone on to school. He's gotten his master's degree. I'm very proud of him.
Isn't that great? I'm going to tell you, you've got such I can't even explain what all you've been through and what all you have done. And I'm still waiting the book, but I have read so much on your web pages. Again, you want to give out that web page?
Yes, it's Terrence Mix. My name is with one R. A lot of people want to put two in there. It's T-E-R-E-N-C-E, Mix, M-I-X.com, TerrenceMix.com.
Is there a way that others, such as I, my daughter, active listeners, can write to get this passed to the FDA?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked me that. I am encouraging everybody to put, there needs to be a warning. Women are entitled to know that there is a risk. Look, at the majority of women that take Clomid are not going to have a child with a birth defect. Probably over 90% are not going to have a child. They're going to have a normal child. I want to make that very clear. But the drug can cause birth defects. And if you happen to be one of those parents whose child is born with a horrible birth defect, you are in a different situation than the person that had a normal child. And it is something that you have to live with. And so my whole purpose here in writing the book and speaking on the radio and speaking to groups is to convey that there is a risk. Know what the risk is. Know the type of birth defects that can be caused. And it's all laid out in my book, by the way. Everything is laid out in my book. But more importantly, that there is a means to reduce or maybe even substantially eliminate that risk that is available. And what has to happen is there needs to be epidemiology studies to show how effective this is. But all of the animal studies show that cholesterol supplements can offset the risk of birth defects with fertility drugs. And this is one of the things I asked the FDA is, first of all, let the people know there's a risk of birth defects. And number two, that there may be a means to eliminate that risk. And I've asked the FDA to require the drug company to order studies, epidemiology studies, where they use the drug in humans, and they introduce a supplement to offset the risk of the birth defects and see the results. Okay. I've asked that. The FDA has been sitting on this petition for a year and a half. Now, I've done a rough calculation, and it is nothing more than that. But there is an average of between 8 and 14 babies born a day whose mothers took fertility drugs that are born with birth defects. So you do the math in a year and a half. We're talking about thousands of babies. And the last response I got from the FDA, because I every month or two I send another letter saying, when are you going to come up with a decision on my petition? And they won't tell me. The last response was the most specific thing they've gotten. They said within the next few months. Okay. And I'm asking people to write to John Jenkins. He is the director of the Office of New Drugs at the FDA. He's got an email address. It's john.jenkins, J-E-N-K-I-N-S, at FDA.HHS.gov. John Jenkins, with a dot between the first and the last name, at FDA.HHS.gov. And
okay.
Tell him, urge him to please do something. I've expressed your unhappiness, quite frankly, as I have done on many occasions, that they're just sitting on this.
Well, there's so many questions I have. What would you expect or wish one to be able to just briefly say in a letter, you know, just hypothetically, if I was writing a letter to the FDA, what would be the best issues to approach, or the way to approach John?
Okay, I would first tell him that I heard Terry Nix speak on the radio, or I read his book, or I went to his website, because there's a lot of information on my website.
Or just say, I know of Terrence Nix.
Yes.
And his work.
And his work. And I know that he filed a petition a year and a half ago. I am very upset that for a year and a half you've been sitting on this and you've made no decision. And I'm asking you, please put in a black box warning. A black box warning with pharmaceutical products is the strongest warning a drug company is required to put on a product, and where it's still allowed to leave it on the market. Okay. Put a black box warning on the drug warning about the risk of birth defects. And that's basically the substance of what you need to send.
Okay. That's really, I just want to make sure I do it right, and everybody else hears, you know, what's the best thing to do, and, you know, to put their input out there. And
I am sure that if you put it in your own words, that you've heard, well, for one thing, you could put in there, I heard that
I've heard of the price of ovulation.
Yeah. Well,
and I want to know exactly why there is not a label on this drug that explains the risks that are involved.
Exactly.
Please allow me to know, as a citizen and a mother, grandmother, or just a person in this world, to know why this has been set on for over a year and a half. Sincerely.
You said it. You know, the more it comes in somebody's own words, the greater the impact. It's not going to sound like this is some canned thing that Nix made up, right?
Right, but you gave me the feeling of what I need to say.
I gave you the information.
By telling me the facts that I need to present in there.
Right. And, you may want to put in there, I understand from Mr. Nix that the FDA requested a warning over 25 years ago, and it's never been put in there.
And it was passed to put in there.
Yeah. Now here's one thing that's very current, or they're certainly more current, okay, that everybody listening to this show needs to know. And that is, on July 2 of last year, July 2nd of 2008, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, that's a department of the federal government of the United States, the CDC gave the results of a seven-year study in which they looked at Clomid to see if there was an increased risk of birth defects. And guess what they found?
What?
They found that the use of Clomid was associated with an increased risk of 170% chance of having anencephaly. Again, that's a neural tube defect born without a brain, and 140% increased risk of being born without limbs. That was that report. It hasn't reached the media yet because it hasn't been put into a formal peer-reviewed journal yet. It's going to be, but it hasn't been put there yet. Okay. But the summary of that study, which is called an abstract,
an abstract is what?
It's called an abstract. An abstract is a summary of a study.
Right.
And there are publications that put abstracts in the publication. But the full, you know, the fully detailed study is not yet out there. But the summary of it is, and I got a copy of it. And the FDA was given a copy of it last July. Okay. Now here again, this is the federal government on an increased risk of using Clomid, and in terms of actually not only the limb reduction defects, not only a neural tube defect such as anencephaly, but there were a couple other birth defects as well. Okay.
So that's the CDC because of 7-year study.
Yeah. The Centers for Disease Control.
Okay, and the EDA is what?
The CDC?
Yeah, the EDC, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to pull all this information.
You know, the government, they like these acronyms, you know. And
right.
So it's the Centers for Disease Control, CDC.
Okay.
And it is a branch of the federal government. In fact, it's the same branch that announced all the information about the swine flu. You know, that's their responsibility to oversee.
Okay, so you didn't say EDC?
CDC.
Okay, it's all CDC. Because I wanted to know what the, okay, they formally reviewed.
It actually was the result of a 7-year study.
Okay, and they made an abstract of the summary.
Yeah, it's an abstract.
But they haven't formally made what?
And the formal study will be in a journal at some future date that is not there yet. And so the media has not yet picked it up.
Well,
they
media has picked it up now because you're on the number one radio station, which is www.bbsradio.com.
Well, everybody
and
knows
so,
now. Everybody that's on this, listening to the show is going to know. And,
exactly.
And, I have
and it will spread. The word will spread. Because I light one candle every time on the show, which I will light it to you, which you light it to another, with your spoken word, that flame will never go out. And we just hand that up to the Creator and ask that this please stop and that the Creator, oh God, just place your hands down and keep this lit to have something done that will prevent these children to be made this way and the defects to be birthed onto these children and these families. Amen. Okay, we have like maybe 4 or 5 minutes left. I want you to just pile it in there. I want you to just tell the world, the universe, how to get in touch with your book, how to order your book. I want you to be able to tell your webpage again and give out the FTC's email again.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
The FDA's email
FDA.
Address. Right. Okay. Again, my website, the book can be ordered through my website. That's at terrencemix.com. TerenceMix.com. The book can be ordered also through Amazon.com. So those are two sources of getting the book. One thing the biggest mission that I am on right now is one of the things I learned is that not only does deficient cholesterol cause birth defects with regard to fertility drugs, but there is a certain percentage of children that are born with birth defects from natural pregnancy. In other words, naturally conceived pregnancy, not having anything to do with fertility drugs.
Right.
Okay?
Is this the human
there
nature?
Are a significant percentage of those birth defects that are caused by deficiency in cholesterol.
There
and
should be warning on this talk is what the message is.
Listen to this statistic. If we could reduce worldwide by just 10%, that would be 400,000 babies per year throughout the world would be born normal that would otherwise be born with birth defects. If it was just a 10% reduction, because there's over 4 million babies a year that are born with major birth defects throughout the world. And that is my goal, is not only to reduce or eliminate birth defects with regard to fertility drugs. And again, I believe there is a means to offset the risk. But also to reduce the number of birth defects worldwide from natural pregnancy.
Well,
and I hope one day...
That was a big mission and a very wonderful mission.
And I believe it's going to happen.
I know it's going to happen. I just know and feel it. I want to ask you, there's so much more to discuss. If you would be willing to come back anytime soon to the Kathy Cook Bright Lights Pathfinder show on bbsradio.com. And what your calendar has open in the near future.
It would be my absolute pleasure. I am going back to New York on May 28th. My book received another award.
What award is that?
Yeah, 2009 Nautilus Silver Award for the category is called Conscious Media Journalism and Investigative Reporting.
Wow.
And
how did you get to the gold?
For a possible gold award. Six other
Man, this is just wonderful. You've done a wonderful job. And let's get on the phone and give each other a call and set up a date for you to come back as a guest host. How's that?
That sounds great to me.
I just want to thank all the listening audience. I want to thank all the mothers-to-be. I want to thank God, the Lord. I want to thank the Holy Angels, and I want to thank your special family, your child that you just lost as being a special angel to your family now. And your wonderful wife, and Terry, thank you so much for being a part of this world and to help humanity as the way that you are.
Well,
and with that, we're off the air.
Okay, Kathy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.